A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford.
Josh Brown, we will see if my voice can stand this podcast. We've recorded many things in a row, multiple hours of talking, and already I feel the strain. It's been the most I've talked in a month.
You probably know what your child feels like now. Imagine how hoarse their voice is after screaming all day.
There's a whole thing about, and any parents will know this, that like as a newborn tries to articulate their thoughts whatsoever, it comes out as crying. That's how I feel. Everything in my brain just comes out as pain. But we thought we'd do a news roundup. Go check out the wind-up as well for some more returning energies as I get back in the flow for things. Been a month since I've done this, Josh.
It feels, I was saying this to the other people on the team, that it feels like the fastest month and the longest month of my life. It feels both like a week has passed and 10 years has passed. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Trying to resurrect my old self and remember how to do this is a whole thing. It's a
hard,
long time.
It's really tough. Like when I was off for that 4 months, like coming back, everything felt new again.
Yeah.
I take so much for granted because when you're doing it every day, it's all muscle memory, isn't
totally.
It? And then you have a break from it, even a small break or whatever, and you come back and you think, oh yeah, I need to figure out how to be work Scott or work Josh again.
I need to figure out how to do the content again. Speaking of which, yeah, we're going to do a bunch of news topics. There are three newses, Josh Brown. First thing is Resident Evil. Resident Evil 9's going open world. Now we knew a bit of this anyway. We did a video back in March talking about this. There's a little bit more details come out about it. But yeah, Resident Evil 9 apparently going open world and will be revealed soon. There's more detail come out about this game from known leaker Dusk Golem, who I feel like is a veteran of the leaker game at this point.
Yeah, definitely.
For as long as we've been doing leaks or covering leaks, which is like 6-7 years at this point, Dusk Golem always been there.
Well, what I love about this leak is that it refers to an older Dusk Golem leak that they made about, and we'll get to it, but the setting of the game.
The Dusk Golem shed. Universe. Yeah. He can't get enough aesthetic gamers in there. He loves it.
The DGU, I love it. But yeah, it sort of links back to that. But I guess without repeating too much from our previous video, I know this is controversial. I'm here for Resident Evil going open world.
Yeah.
I think they're practically there anyway. Mm. And I need to clarify this because I think to a lot of people, myself included, when they hear the word open world, they think Assassin's Creed. They think Just Cause. They think like these huge sandboxes. And that's not what I mean. When I think open world, I'm thinking something more akin to Arkham City. An open area, but one that is smaller than a Grand Theft Auto map, but one that is densely detailed and is recursive on itself.
Right, okay. I'm curious about the lessons they learned from... I'll get back to the details as well. There's more about RE9, but I'm curious in regards to how you make a bigger map and make it feel dense and curated and worthwhile, because I love... There was a certain groove that RE Village kind of hit about halfway through where you were clearing different parts of the map and you were using different items to go back and forth. RE2 Remake had a bit of it as well, where they would tell you on the map screen, hey, there's something else in this area that you haven't seen, go back and find it. And I thought Village had a really good groove after, once you got out of the initial area, going up against Lady D and everything. And yeah, I'm just curious, like, if they're going to do an open world Resident Evil, does it still feel like one big curated map? Do they have big, long stretches where you're taking a vehicle from place to place or whatever? Dusk Golem's updated details say that the game will be set in a fictional rural town on an island in the Southeast Asia Sea, specifically inspired by Singapore. Interestingly, it's been in development for 7 years, which predates RE Village and kind of like brings about a whole conversation on were they thinking about this years ago. Village is almost more of a proof of concept or might be retrospectively when we see where they do next. And apparently it's going to be announced soon. The release date is penciled in as January next year.
Oh, yes.
So it's not too much longer to wait. I feel like that's still continuing the Capcom cadence that they've settled into. And we had RE4 Remake, RE Village. Like, there's been Resident Evil stuff pretty consistently. And you might as well top that off with RE9.
Oi, man.
Oi.
Call me Churchill because, oh, yes, I'll say it again. I need more Resident Evil in my life.
Very good.
And I thank you.
I thought you meant the warmonger.
Thank you.
You
for
mean
that.
The other
no,
fella?
No, I mean, no. I mean the little doggy. Yeah, yeah,
the little advert. The other Churchill.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Look it up on YouTube if you
I said were. Warmonger. I don't know what his title was. Churchill, well, the war man.
He was a prime minister, wasn't he?
The warman. That's the
let's,
one.
Let's
yeah.
go with that.
Probably didn't monger that much of his stuff.
Who knows? What we'll are you have to do some history afterwards.
If this leaves in the edit, then enjoy yourself.
He wasn't yeah. a dog, is all we know.
That's right.
You know, which is who I was referring to.
Yes.
What was I talking about, Scott Telford?
Churchill.
Churchill. When it comes to Resident Evil and the cadence, like you said, yes. of Capcom having a yearly release, next year, to me, that seems perfect. It's 5 years, which is crazy, after Village.
Good God.
And if it has been in development for 6 or 7 years, like these leaks suggest, and the previous leaks seem to suggest as well, because if I'm getting those right, I think the last time Just Golem talked about this project in particular, I'm trying to remember information that's a few years old now, but I'm pretty sure the original idea was that Village was going to be a spin-off, but then the quality was there for it that Capcom decided, oh no, we'll make this a numbered release. We'll continue the story of Ethan Winters. That makes me excited about what's coming next because yes. The ending of Village, while there were a few teasers about what could happen after that story was done, it felt like they'd sort of wrapped up that narrative, I thought, yeah. with the end of that game. So what are we going to get this time around? Are we going to get any characters related to that storyline? Are we going to get a brand new character with a brand new setting? Or will we see the return of old faces like Leon or Claire or Jill or whoever it is?
What if it's a custom character? And you, because the thing is, like, one thing that I thought they did really well in Village was differentiating the different areas of the overall map. Like, the Beneviento house is, like, one of the scariest locations Resident Evil has ever done. Tapping into, like, the PT New Age Silent Hill vibe, and that was, like, you know, very much distinguished from the castle where Lady D and the vampires were. And I like the idea of blowing that out and having different feels to different areas in a bigger map. So that just made me think, what if you're a custom character or you're... Because Ethan Winters...
Yes.
Yes, Ethan Page is a wrestler. Ethan Winters might as well be a blank slate custom protagonist. Like, there's not that much to him. And so I just wonder, like, if you're going to explore this big area and you have all these different differentiable parts of it, then maybe you have characters that are already tackling some big, you know, whatever the enemy force is.
Yeah.
And you're checking in. You're partnering up with Chris for a bit. You're partnering up with Jill for a bit. And you're going between these different areas.
See, oh, I get the appeal of it, right? I really do. And you're 100% right. Ethan, especially in 7, was supposed to be as much of a blank slate as possible. For the new first-person perspective to allow you to really put yourself into his shoes and his arms, which are always coming off. but I thought with Village, they managed to round him out a bit more. Like they gave him way more of a sense of character and way more of an impact on the actual story itself. You know, him and Mia and just making him, giving him that combat training that Chris gave him between games, I thought did a lot to make him feel like someone who was more capable or whatever. Yeah. I worry that with a custom character, if it's completely a blank slate, that you lose a bit of the horror. Like for me in survival horror games, often so much of it is tied around the protagonist, less so in Resident Evil, but you still have that mythology around someone like Leon or Claire or Chris, like I said. But, you know, you take something like The Evil Within 2 and that lead character in that game, he was kind of nothing in the first title, but in the second game, suddenly he's got all this baggage, he's got this family, what's going on is almost a manifestation of his own biggest fears or whatever. It's directly linked to him.
Mm-hmm.
So I worry you'd sort of lose that interiority if you go completely custom. However, fair. I would like an element of customization over your protagonist, but I would like them to have some kind of rigid story, whether that's flexible or not. Fair enough.
Speaking of story, where you are on expectations of a main thread in Resident Evil? Like, for the people who have been following Resident Evil since the beginning, like, we've seen things like in RE4, you had Los Ganados, and then in RE5, it was like we went to Africa. There was, like, the whole origin of the various viruses, the different plants and everything. RE6 is the one that I didn't finish. I know that RE6 is obviously very contentious in itself, but and then RE7 kind of got away from that. It was almost like a soft reboot. You had, like, the different sort of, like, parasitic stuff with the Baker family. And then Village had werewolves and everything else. And it kind of just, it does eventually tie back around to, like, you know, the original like characters like Spencer or whatever else.
Yeah.
At the very end of Village, or it was like the founder of Umbrella and everything. And so I'm just curious, like, do people, for a numbered Resident Evil installment, are there people hanging on to the lore, wanting the next main chapter of that main thread, what are the characters up to, etc.?
Yeah.
Or because of how successful 7 was in sort of differentiating itself, and like I said, all the Ethan Winter stuff, do you just call it RE9, but it's open world and it has very little to do with that initial thread of trying to pick apart what the secrets of Umbrella were.
You're right at the center of what I'm going to dub right now, the Resident Evil conundrum, right? Because everyone wants something different from Resident Evil. Like every fan, no matter how diehard you are, probably wants something else from what Resident Evil 9 is going to be. To me, I always like the reinvention of it. I know 4 still stars Leon, but like that story is practically completely different. Like the links to the previous games are so small, and it felt like a fresh start. Same with 7, like the Umbrella stuff and the Biohazard stuff itself only really comes in right towards the end. Otherwise, it feels entirely different. So I like the idea of constantly doing something new. And in their current form, I've kind of come to not doubt Capcom anymore. I probably should still be a little bit skeptical, but when it was first announced that Resident Evil 8 was going to star werewolves, everyone was like, what? I don't want any werewolves. Like, that's going to be strange. It's going to be fairy tale based. What the hell is that about? But then for me, they pulled that off really well and managed to make it feel like a Resident Evil game. So going forward, if they want to take more risks like that, I'm fine with it. And I'll tell you why I'm fine with it.
Please do.
Because we're never going to lose spin-offs and remakes. Like you said, they've committed to a Resident Evil every single year. So we're always going to get those classic characters in some form, whether it's redoing them or whether it's continuing their stories and spin-offs like Revelations or whatever it is. We're going to always see zombies. We're always going to see the Ganados in some form. So I like this era where the main franchise can evolve and change and take risks, because we've always got that bedrock of classic Resident Evil, as it were, paraphernalia.
That's the thing that I'm so curious if they remake RE5 and then do 6. Like, there are lots of salvageable elements to both those games, especially things like 6. Like, I like the combat model that Leon has in RE6.
Yeah.
I think there's things that you can do with remixing the original games to get them in a more like unified timeline. Like, so far, the remakes of RE, like obviously one from a good few years ago, but RE2, 3, and 4 are like the whole, like a new canon, like where it's way more crystallized, it makes way more sense. They're not improvising as much as they were back in the day. Retrospectively, they can kind of knit it together. Some of the response to like this stuff leaking out is a bit more of a groan these days than as things used to be. And I wonder whether just the idea of, hey, it's going open world, is just more of like a sour thing in 2024.
100%. I mean, you look at the comments, rightly so, I get the skepticism on our last video. You look at the Reddit threads and stuff, and a lot of people, like you said, are kind of groaning and going, I don't know if I necessarily want this. I don't think this is a good move for the franchise. To me, it does make sense, because they are almost there. Like, those old games could be small open world games, in my opinion. Like, something like The Island in Code Veronica, or The Spencer Mansion in 1, or Raccoon City in 2 and 3. And especially Village, you're so close to it anyway.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's way more authored, but I think an open world that is more authored is fine anyway. That kind of lead you down certain paths and might lock off certain areas until later on. Like, when I say open world in Resident Evil, I don't view it as a sandbox. I don't view it as go wherever, tackle the story in a non-linear fashion. I think of it still scripted and still focused and still authored, just by knocking down the boundaries that are there in the level design and just really opening up.
Resident Evil feels like this big omnipresent franchise at this point, and I will take various different slices of it. We said it in the previous video, or we talked about it, but I want third person. If you're giving me vehicles, I want it to be a bit closer to something like Metal Gear Solid 5. Just give me a little Jeep, whatever it is, and I'll bomb around from location to location, maybe across a dilapidated Raccoon City or whatever it is, taking in authored chunks in between.
I don't know about you, but that was always my dream for Resident Evil 3's remake. Give me a Raccoon City that's at least semi-open. I want to live in that space, because that would be such a cool idea, I think. And that's kind of what I want to see them do this time around. Give us a space that we can explore and hide scares in there. The Evil Within 2 showed us how surprising horror can be if you give us control of not only our character, but where we go in the environment, because there's always something unknown lurking around a corner, and it doesn't feel as scripted as, you know, a more straightforward linear story, which can still be very scary.
An open world horror game is still a very much untapped combination of genres. In fact, that we always point to The Evil Within 2, because there's hardly anyone doing it that well.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Nintendo, your friend and mine, Nintendo.
I like Mr. Nintendo.
I love Nintendo. Massive update on the Switch 2. This comes from Nintendo President Shuntaro Furukawa, getting out there on Twitter or putting a general press statement out saying that they will be doing a Nintendo Direct in June, but that won't feature the Switch 2 or whatever the next Switch is, but the Switch 2 itself will be announced after that, but before the end of March next year. So there is just a weird non-statement thing.
Love it.
But at least we have a window for this. He said, we will be holding a Nintendo Direct this June regarding the Nintendo Switch software lineup for the latter half of 2024, but please be aware that there will be no mention of the Nintendo Switch successor during that presentation. We will make an announcement about the successor to Nintendo Switch within this fiscal year, which takes you until like March 31st or whatever, 2025. We go back and forward on like general expectations for the next Nintendo Switch. I know that the hardware has started to leak for this.
Yeah.
And there's a whole thing out there about how the new Joy-Cons are like magnetized to the side of the screen.
Ooh.
That sounds really cool.
Well, I've missed all of this stuff. That's
okay,
cool.
See, I don't know all of it in terms of the, like every single bit of it, but one of the coolest takeaways was this idea of using magnets for the new Joy-Cons. Apparently there's a new way that magnets can have electricity put through them, which means that it doesn't constantly take away from the battery life. Mm. But it's some new way of doing magnetized controllers. Just sounds cool. Cool. But the actual guts of it, I mean, in theory, like nothing's fully confirmed yet. I guess it will be when they get out there. It's not that much of a leap up in terms of the you know, the guts of it. It's still going to be 1080p handheld, 4K when docked. And it's not necessarily going to be competing with the PS5s and things like that, which is interesting because that would mean that if you're a third-party dev or you're trying to put a Switch version of something together from scratch, you've got to try and have feature parity along the way. And one of the biggest conversations around Xbox doing the Series X and the Series S was how much the Series S was holding the generation back. That could totally apply here. Hmm. I think it depends. You know, there's that whole thing where after Microsoft / Xbox acquired Activision Blizzard, they said they'd bring Call of Duty to Nintendo, to the Switch. And so like trying to make a version of Call of Duty that works on this thing when you're also trying to break boundaries and turn heads and make it work for the biggest systems in the market, that's got to be a head F in itself.
Hey, they can bring Call of Duty Mobile to Switch, maybe Switch 2.
Why have they not?
I don't know.
That thing plays really well.
I don't know. Everyone tells me that is really good.
Yeah.
Warzone on mobile, who'd have thought?
Surprisingly good.
I don't know about you, Scott. Mm. I need a Switch 2 yesterday. I need some new hardware from this company because I do not turn my Switch on, and that's very much a me problem, but it's because of the hardware just feeling very outdated. I have bored you to death with my opinions on Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, but I couldn't get into that as much because I have become accustomed to the luxury of PlayStation 5s and Xbox Series X's and the graphical fidelity and the technology that is there in those systems. Even something as simple as the PlayStation 5's faster loading, I miss going back to Nintendo consoles. Yeah. So the fact that this was never going to be a PS5 or an Xbox Series X contender.
No.
And those specs that you just described, 4K docked, 1080p handheld, I kind of grimaced initially, but I'm all right with that. 4K docked is okay. From the leak specs that we've seen, it seems like there is a decent amount of power in there. Obviously, again, still a step down from the competition. And I'm not really bothered about third-party stuff myself. Mm. I will almost never, I think, in my life buy a third-party release on a Nintendo console.
Every time I have, I've regretted it.
Exactly right. And they need to do a lot of work anyway, I think, to build up those relationships with publishers, with developers, and also with fans and consumers, because they need to prove that they're not going to get a Witcher 3 situation or they're not going to get an Outer Worlds situation again, and that they're going to get a proper experience on whatever this next piece of hardware is. I'm looking forward to it. I just want an excuse to pre-order it. I want them to announce something big, whether it isn't the next Mario or the next IP that they have in store. I want them to drop the hardware, have it be as good as all the leaks suggest, and have some games to back it up. Because I bought a Switch.
You did.
The first Nintendo system I ever bought in my life to play Mario Odyssey, to play Breath of the Wild. And I need, personally, as an outsider, as a casual fan, I need something on that level to get
The first third-party split thing's interesting because, like, there was a whole thing, I forget the person who put the report out about the top 10, respective top 10s per console across the last sort of few months. And that was when the report was put out. But the looking at the games that sell the most on Switch, it's nearly always first party. It is Animal Crossing, it is Mario Kart, it is Mario Zelda, etc. And they're the only company that is completely sustaining on first party.
Yeah.
And like to such a huge degree that their first party titles are rivaling the Call of Duties, etc. in the world. And so, yeah, I agree. Like every time I've bought a third party game on Switch, I've regretted it. I bought Alien noir. It looked horrible. Like, it's a first party system, and especially archivally, like looking, is archivally a word?
Let's make it now.
In an archival sense, playing things like Super Nintendo games, N64 games. I was playing Mario Kart 64 on the train this morning, and it worked very, very well. I like the Switch as this hub of all things Nintendo, and I know that they kind of went back and forward, or people go back and forward on how well they executed on the whole virtual console thing. I like the whole per console application. Like when you go on the Switch on the home screen, you have a launcher for Super Nintendo, for NES, for N64, and Game Boy and Game Boy Advance. I like that as an overall approach, and I kind of I wish Sony would do that for give me a PS2 icon and let me go into a library of PS2 games or whatever. And so I think going forward, you have to assume they carry all that stuff over. There's a whole conversation on backwards compatibility. And apparently, this is another one of the leaks that came out last year, was, or maybe the year before, was that Nintendo were showing off the next bit of hardware using Tears of the Kingdom. Using Breath of the Wild. And giving that like the 4K upscale. And so the assumption is that a lot of existing Switch games would benefit from this system, would auto upscale, kind of like how a Series X works, to make it in the most simple terms possible.
That's amazing for me.
You
because hope. I worry about Nintendo and their sort of sometimes desire to just disregard stuff and willingness to start again.
They can sell you it all again.
Because they can sell you it all again.
Sell it all again.
Exactly. They will sell Scott Telford another copy of Super Mario 64. and they get away with it, right? In the Switch, I'll always say that my biggest disappointment was throwing away the virtual library from the Wii U and starting again with subscription services and, you know, dropping games on the older games, historical games on that platform. And I just hope we don't have to go through that again with the Switch 2. I hope a lot of that stuff is transferable. Just for me personally, because if we're, you know, 2 years into the next console's life cycle and we're getting announcements at a Nintendo Direct that you can play Ocarina of Time finally on the latest hardware and it's just a port, it's going to be like, I've lived too many lives to go through this again.
It's so fascinating watching them like trying to find ways of selling you the library over and over again, because the virtual console was so robust. But the thing is, the virtual console was awesome in terms of the breadth of titles that were on there, but they weren't upscaled. Like some were, I think, but the vast majority were just ports. They were the versions as they existed back in the day, which is different to the way that they do them on the Switch, where you can save wherever you want and they're upscaled, they're put into HD or whatever. That feels like a more definitive take. And you would assume internally that they put all the R&D into that to be able to say, this is just what the service is now going forward. There'll be an N64 launcher on a homepage and you just play N64 games and then we just add stuff to that, which I like the way that they've done it. I think it's, to me, it's industry standard, industry best. Like that's what I would want Sony and Microsoft and stuff to do as well. But they can only sell you that once. And I think their approach to do it as a monthly fee is interesting in the wider realm of monthly fees, because I feel like the monthly fee model hasn't really worked out. You've seen the likes of Netflix and Disney Plus and whatever put their prices up, and Nintendo Switch Online, they've been competitive. Like there's no way that you could say that, putting it up against the prices of PlayStation Plus and Game Pass and everything, the libraries aren't the same.
Yeah.
Even though I would say something like Ocarina or Mario Kart or whatever is worth more than what's on the Game Passes and the PlayStation Pluses, come at me. But still, that whole thing of trying to remain competitive, it's interesting. Do they sell you an N64 library? Do they sell you an upscaled version of a Super Nintendo thing or whatever? I don't know. They don't seem to be competing with the big boys whatsoever. So no, they're kind of off on their own island, and the Switch only allowed them to double down on that island.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
After the failure of the Wii U.
100%. They built that island up, Animal Crossing style. No, it's the subscription thing is really interesting to me. Again, very casual, very outside the ecosystem, but who kind of wants more excuses to play Nintendo stuff. And unlike an Xbox subscription or a PlayStation subscription, when they roll over and I kind of didn't want them to, I feel a little bit gutted, but I don't feel slighted because at the very least, I can jump onto Game Pass, see what's out new that month, jump to PlayStation Plus, see if there's anything to pick up. Every time I get the Nintendo Switch online service, and I know sometimes it's like a one-off, and then you pay, I think it's like $5.99 for like the online and certain perks with that. I feel like Mr. Nintendo has punched me in the gut and taken a fiver from my wallet because I just know I'm never going to use that. So I would love it going forward on this new system if you could make those individual purchases, if all of those games were just available, because it's cool to lump them into a subscription, but it's not really their forte, but why not give us options? Why not sell them separately, allow us to pick and choose, rather than having to fork in all of this money for the new Mario Kart maps or whatever it is?
People joked about Nintendo Switch Online being a Mario Kart subscription service. Like, that's the most, like, other than Smash Brothers, that's like, that's what we play online. And that's another thing as well, is I like the way that Nintendo have tried to sweeten the pot with, like, they do exclusive DLC add-on, they did Animal Crossing add-on. You get things like F-Zero 99, they had the Mario 99 thing. Like, there are little bespoke games, Tetris 99, things that you can only play if you have Switch Online. And I like that as a, one, it differentiates from PlayStation Plus and Game Pass.
Yeah.
And two, like, it's such a just a cool idea. Like, take a Super Nintendo game from, like, 1992 or whatever, and then make it so 100 people can play against each other, or 99 people can play against each other. That's just such a cool, unique, weird way to do something old meets new. And so I want more things like that. The game side of it is really interesting because I feel like they've held back. Like, it's been such a filler year.
Definitely.
For a little while. And that's either because they have a bunch of irons in the fire, or it's they've realized they don't need to supplant that many titles. It's interesting going forward. I mentioned this on some of the other Nintendo videos that we've done. You know, Shigeru Miyamoto is not getting any younger. Eiji Onuma heading up Zelda. Like, you have all these veterans who are, like, you know, towards their twilight years, let's say. And I'm interested in how they pass the torch. It's not that they haven't been training people up. And there was a whole report that came out about Nintendo a couple of years ago about how they have, like, a 98% retention of employees. Once you're in Nintendo, they treat you well and you stay. And so that hopefully means that that culture will carry forward. But the next Switch or the next couple of consoles will be the turning point of, like, how Nintendo feels as a business.
Oh, that's exciting.
Or as a set of creators.
Worrying, isn't it? Like, I feel like they don't have anything to prove, really. They're so entrenched. Like you said, they've built that island up over the past decade, especially. And again, as a casual fan, I just want to see, I'm fine with just more. I'm more Zelda, more Mario, more of your core franchises. That's what would get me in.
Right.
But I also want to see what the future of the company looks like. What is going to be the killer app for this next piece of hardware? What new IPs have you got cooked up? Because it's been a long time since Splatoon. You know, it's been a good while.
Mm.
And I've got a question for you to maybe finish this section off. Do you want them to call it the Switch 2? Because I'm totally fine with them just going, yep, it's just more Switch. It's Switch 2.
It's the Super Nintendo Switch.
Oh, that's
what
sick.
Are we doing if it's not the Super Nintendo Switch?
You're right.
I mean, we're a bit in vogue of people channeling 90s things anyway.
Mm.
So that might make them not want to do it. But SNS is a great abbreviation. Do it.
Nah, got it.
Go on.
I'm going to one up yet. The Switch U. How about that? I think that's good. Nintendo.
It's, only if it comes with an optional tablet to play golf with. But yeah, I'm curious about all that stuff. You mentioned the games, just to roll one thing off that assumedly will be on there is Metroid Prime 4, something that was announced back in 2017.
Assumedly.
That could take full advantage of the new hardware and things like Star Fox. I think they'll just be tapping back into franchises that could do with bigger scope. Like you can do a more intergalactic Star Fox and do a bigger Metroid game. But other than that, I think like next year will be at least the next Mario.
Well, as a diehard Switch fan, I think it would be fair to describe you as to a certain degree.
Possibly.
If they are holding all of this stuff off for the new hardware, like, what do you want from the June Direct for the rest of the year? Like, did you have any faith that they've got any secret big hitters up their sleeve to see the Switch off? Or do you, to me, again, as a casual fan, it feels like they've almost sunsetted the console already.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
At this point, after Princess Peach is out, which was, for me, again, the last big game that I kind of associated with.
It was fine.
It's like fine. Okay, here you go. But do you think they have a big hit to see the console off, or is it just like, okay, we'll take a year?
I think they've found a nice little niche of tapping back into PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3, Xbox, and Xbox 360 era games and just doing slightly upscaled versions of them, because it still feels cool to have a handheld version of Knights of the Old Republic or whatever on the Switch. When the Battlefront collection was revealed, people like lost their minds over it. It was horrible at launch, but when it was first revealed, the idea of getting that caliber of old school games upscaled, given online functionality or whatever, I think they've found that that little niche works. And you don't see people calling out their lack of first party in the way that people call out Sony and Xbox.
No.
Nintendo, for as much as they're known for first party, when they have those off years, just the sheer viability of the handheld nature of the Switch seems to carry them through. And my library on Switch, you know, for most of this year, has been made up of old Final Fantasies. It's been the Atari collection. It's been Balatro. It hasn't been first party, because I just like using my Switch, whether I'm on a train or whatever. And so it doesn't make it okay. Like, I always want to see a company put their first-party stuff out, but I think they realized how much they can just coast by on that, perfect the next wave of games that are coming. They're still recovering from the pandemic. All the stuff that happened with the next Switch, that was all leaked during the pandemic. They rolled with a punch. They put the Switch OLED out. Well, they rolled with a slap to the face of the consumer. But at the same time, all of that stuff was put in motion during the pandemic. And I hope that they're hanging back on the first party front to like knock it out of the park next year.
100%. You know, I said at the start of this section that I want a Switch 2 yesterday, but at the same time, I know that the extra weight is going to pay off, because it does feel at this point that they have bullets in the chamber. They have these big things to drop. Again, you would hope, in the fact that they've taken that little bit extra time and not rushed a Switch 2 out when they could have. They could have jumped a year after Xbox and Sony dropped their new consoles, or even 2 years afterwards, but they've waited, and hopefully that pays dividends, and hopefully we do get big hitters at least in that launch year to justify swapping, because I think a lot of people will need to justify it to themselves, because like you said, there's a whole part of the audience that is just like, I treat this differently to the other consoles. I treat it as a handheld. I treat it to have this library of third-party partnerships on the smaller scale or indies or whatever it is. So what are the big hitters that differentiate, you know, what is still presumably going to be this hybrid handheld docked machine?
Yeah, I think to round it out, when you said about what do they do in the Direct, I think they still tease stuff that's coming down the line. You get like a Star Fox logo. You'll probably get a Metroid Prime 4 update, and maybe they show it running. It'll say in-engine, but it won't be on Switch. Like, I just wonder, like, the whole thing here about, like, oh, we're not going to be showing off the next Switch system doesn't mean they can't show or tease in-game, in-engine stuff for the next system. So they have a lot of, I mean, it's, you know, it's Nintendo. The things that have been rumored for a while, while, like that open world Donkey Kong game that is more in the vein of the most recent Kirby game, things like that. The things that'll make simpletons like myself very excited. where, oh my God, it's a 3D version of a thing from 2D. Like, it does not take much to get the Nintendo faithful very excited. So they could just end on a logo reveal or whatever it is, or just do more stuff where you say, hey, we've put PsyOps on Switch. And I would lose my mind over that. So it's like they have options for that stuff. Finally, you know, it's been 5 minutes since we said the world's open world. So the next open world news item is the Tomb Raiders going open world. How's that grab you before we dive into this?
More conflicted than I was about Resident Evil, but I think it does make sense. Mm-hmm. The more I dwell on it, the more I'm like, right, this... I can see it.
I want to delve into, did you play all three of the most recent Tomb Raiders?
I didn't finish the last one, but I played it.
Yeah. Right. So I didn't finish Rise. I played 2013, adored it. Thought Rise was cool, but I didn't like how more open-ended Rise went. And a lot of people do.
Yeah.
I hated Shadow, but that was mainly because I thought the tone was all over the place. They were still doing the, is it really Lara? Is it really the Tomb Raider? And then that final boss was horrible. A lot of the mission design I thought was terrible. It was a bit of a rocky trilogy. Mm. And Rihanna Pratchett left after the first one anyway, even though she was like helming the whole sort of reboot of Lara and everything. But my point is that when they went wider in Rise, that felt like a step towards what Tomb Raider could be, where it's like you take the sort of, Uncharted would then make it its own, like Uncharted 4, Lost Legacy has those semi-open world spaces, and you're just like doing a bit of archaeology, you're exploring in those spaces. That could have been Tomb Raider's new identity.
Yes.
And they kind of missed it. And it's like, that we said before about Resident Evil, when someone says, oh, hey, this franchise is going open world. And it's like, I'll read some detail.
Come on.
Because there's some stuff in here. So the actual leaker is V Scooper. No, I've never heard of V Scooper before. No. The various outlets are reporting this as well, or writing it up anyway, talking about Tomb Raider going fully open world, and mentioning from V Scooper that the next Tomb Raider will be fully open world and set in India, featuring vast sceneries, free use of the motorcycle, parachute, and Lara's common traversal methods to unrestrictedly navigate across a big map and its challenges. They mentioned factions on the map as well, and taking them out in different ways, and that you have options in regards to non-lethal takedowns, which reminds me of Angel of Darkness, which you could do little choke takedowns in Angel of Darkness.
Underrated, by the way.
I don't think that's true. That's not a thing that people should say in a public space.
Sorry to interrupt you, but please, you know how we're like, what, 6 years apart or whatever it is?
Yes.
And we have that slight generational difference.
You like Tony Hawk's 3, I like Tony Hawk's 2.
Precisely that. Yes. I like Angel of Darkness. That was kind of my growth. I was the perfect age for Angel of Darkness. I was like, right, this is Tomb Raider grown up. And I enjoyed the game, Scott. I really did. I needed to get that off my chest.
As well you should. I got it when, I thought, yeah, that came out, but I got it that Christmas. Mm. And I tried to force myself to like that game. I like the aesthetic. I like the idea of Dark Lara. That was the whole era of like dark sequels, like Jack and Daxter or whatever. But yeah, that idea of taking the sort of trademark elements of Tomb Raider exploration. When V Scooper says Lara's common traversal methods, I just think of swan dives. So climbing and swan dives and sideways jumps, I guess.
Some of the items she got in the recent trilogy, perhaps the ice picks, the where pittons. You climb it up. Yeah, there's some stuff there.
You can do some stuff there. I just that idea of like how do we make Tomb Raider relevant again, and then trying to make it like a head turny or whatever. Like there is a way that you could combine, like do a much bigger platformer kind of thing. You know, Tomb Raider always had that verticality sensibility, which hasn't really been done by anybody else. Like we're kind of overdue a really good open world platformer that has that sense of tactility when you're exploring.
100%. Like, I can see a lot of perspectives who will look at this leak and say, of course they're going open world. Open worlds are in. Open worlds will apparently never leave. Of course, this is another iconic franchise going down that route. But at the same time, I almost think they're like damned if they do, damned if they don't. Because if they stay to the more linear path, they're always, 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 no matter how good they are, going to get compared to Uncharted.
Yes.
We probably will get another Uncharted at some point, and you're going to never avoid that comparison. And to many people, Uncharted was their first for this specific reinvention of Tomb Raider and, you know, has more money, more spectacle, and just does it a little bit better. So if I was developing this game, which I never should, don't put me in charge of any franchise ever, I'd be worried about constantly living in that shadow. What can we do to differentiate ourselves? Mm-hmm. And like you said, Rise of the Tomb Raider sort of showed us this, a what if for the franchise, kind of blow this stuff up, make it more freeform, make it more player-driven while maintaining, you know, the really good mechanical side of things. And although Uncharted has tiptoed into that area itself with The Lost Legacy, it hasn't committed to it fully. So if Tomb Raider can get there first, it'll feel different, I think.
My thing is, like, Shadow had those open spaces as well. I just remember like landing in a different way with Rise, because I liked how authored 2013 felt, like new version of Lara. Like I said, Rihanna Pratchett was on board at the beginning, and I really love that game, like the whole survivalist side of her. Like, she's throwing up as she's killing her first person or whatever. Like, there's a kind of grounding to the character there, which I guess is only going to be resigned to that trilogy. Because there was the whole like Anniversary Legacy Underworld trilogy as well, which I love. Like, that to me is perfect Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
Like, I like 2013's one a lot, and elements of the most recent trilogy, but the level design and the gadgets and the combat, like slow motion flips with the twin pistols. Like, to me, like, if you're going to do, you're going to reboot Tomb Raider again, and there's versions of Lara out there in like Fortnite, and there's some official artwork, I think, for this that's already been put out there. Or there was some official art that was doing the rounds that looked more like her 90s costume. If you're going to do that again, you stick to the tenets of the character that made her so cool. Even if it's 90s retro cool, the twin pistols, the backflips, you indulge in that, you make it fun to play like that.
Yeah.
Like, I am, you're doing a little face there.
No, I'm just, no, I don't mean to dismiss what you're saying, because I definitely see the appeal of that. I wonder if there's a way to do both.
Probably.
I wonder if there's a way to maintain the element of cool, the element of fun, but keep a sense of character and keep a sense of character depth. Because my issue was, as the Tomb Raider trilogy, the most recent one, kind of continued, it was almost became a parody of itself in terms of how Lara was presented. Like you said, we had that origin story like three times, and it felt like she was a bit one note.
Yeah.
So I felt like, while you might call the older Lara one note, this almost got to the same territory on the opposite end of the spectrum, where it was like too somber, too gritty, too something. So I kind of want it to meet in the middle, where you kind of have both elements, make of that fully rounded character, keep a compelling story, but don't veer away from the spectacle and the fun and the bombast of those older games.
My thing is, like, Lara as a design obviously is really iconic, and it's I was just looking at this, and a game called Tomb Raider Reloaded, which is just the Tomb Raider version of Vampire Survivors. It's like an auto-fire, whatever we're calling that genre. But the version of Lara in there is like the one that's in Fortnite. It's like the classic Lara. I think in Fortnite you can get the 2013 one as well. But it's like that whole question of, like, to me, Lara Croft and Tomb Raider is so old now that it's iconic. It's Mario, it's Master Chief. Like, you can remix it and do something new if you want, but it's also completely fine to just double down on the classic look and the classic personality that Lara has. Like, she was quite sarcastic and darkly humored, and she was a great character to play as. And there's obviously the sex appeal side of it, but she had a great personality too. And, like, that was always a way bigger deal anyway.
Yeah.
That was way fun to play as Lara and talk to people and mess with the butler and stick him in the fridge or whatever. Like, you can do way more with that character as this, like, aged veteran explorer who's, like, putting up with a certain amount of obstacles in her way. Like, to me, I would rather they double down on the writing, almost take a page out of the way Jill Valentine's done in Resi 3's remake.
That's a great template.
Like, make her, like, a character you love playing as. Because I didn't love playing as her after 2013's Tomb Raider. I just thought that she was back and forward so much on in Rise and Shadow, of like, oh, this is the real Tomb Raider coming out. And it was the bit when she comes out of like the water in Shadow, and it's, I don't know if you got that far,
where she's like covered in blood.
Like, what is this? The end of Blade 2.
I like that.
It's a cool,
like,
shot.
Yeah.
But like, how's that? I mean, I don't know. That was such a weird beat where I was like, it's kind of bad. But then she's like, just melee takes out a bunch of dudes and she's like, hench. And I was like, do a hench Tomb Raider.
Oh, that'd be cool.
But you got to double down on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think this long after this many different versions of Lara, like, I in a way would welcome them just doing a traditionalist version of Tomb Raider, because there hasn't been a throwback like straightforward version of her in a while.
No, 100%. I guess for me, it's what are they trying to do with the franchise at this point? Are they content, and are the publishers content with doing a Tomb Raider, for lack of a better term, or do they want Tomb Raider with the recognition that comes with that franchise, with the respect, with the cultural cachet? Do they want it up there leading the industry? Are they wanting to, and by that I mean, are they going to make it in line with the rest of the industry in a way by saying, like, we need it to have this big story, we need these big cinematics, we need it to be a $200 million production. Saying that's right.
I think that would kill it.
I can see them chasing that, definitely, 100%.
Well, my thing is, like, I've played through, I only played one so far, but the remastered collection that came out the other month, Like, that was such a reminder of how simple those games were. Like, obviously, you've got the Croft Manor that you can explore, and then, like, the mission design is just, you're just trying to find a relic. And then it's, like, those games always shined in the level design. So I'm up for them stripping it all the way back. Like, you get the... there's like a snow speeder, you get the bike and stuff in those old games anyway, and there's boat sections, there's vehicle sections in those games. So you can use that to stitch together different, you know, platforming gauntlets kind of thing. But it just has to have that core identity.
That's
like,
it.
No one's doing good 3D vertical space exploration, like the Gone Home game, Grow Home games did. But playing those remastered games, I was like, no one's doing this.
Yeah,
mastering a 3D environment and really climbing really high.
I just wanted to maintain that sense of personality that you mentioned there, that identity, whether that's going back to the 90s games or whether being more in vain in the 2013 game, but just make it feel like Tomb Raider. My worst case scenario for this reboot and it going open world is that it feels like a third person Far Cry.
Right.
I don't want it to feel like a third person Far Cry because I can see that outcome plain as day, because it's that I just think the ideas are so similar in that regard. Like, Far Cry, lest we forget, has a lot of traversal in it. Like, it has that first person platforming. It has that, to a degree, 3 and 4 especially has the idea of mastery of a space, and like you're in this, you know, tropical land, this unknown land, and you're getting to grips with it. You're becoming the master of the jungle, as it were.
Totally.
And I don't want Tomb Raider to just devolve into that, because in getting away from Uncharted, it might just become an Ubisoft open world, and I hope it's way more focused and retains that element of level design that you mentioned.
Yeah, and like, I wonder if they've taken this long to do an open world Tomb Raider because the likes of Breath of the Wild or Immortals Fenyx Rising proved that you can do a climb anywhere open world game.
Yeah.
Like, that's, no one's doing that other than the Zeldas. Like, that idea of just taking open world space and you can literally climb up anything and have various survival elements to get you up different surfaces and hide rewards up cliffs. Like, you should be, it should feel exciting to look at different 3D structures, but I'm going to conquer that.
Yes, that's 100%. Like, to me, I think it's a perfect way to incorporate the titular tombs.
Yes.
You know, people complained about the lack of those in the reboot trilogy, and I totally get it. But I think, like, an open world almost provides the perfect sandbox to implement those naturally. Like, imagine, like, stumbling across something, and then you realize it's this labyrinth of, that would be like a classic old school Tomb Raider tomb, and like, you get lost for hours and you just stumble across that. That idea of exploration, that idea of, you know, really excavating something, I think it could translate well if they commit to the bit.
Yeah, and there was like various caves in, I think in Shadow as well, but I remember them in Rise, where you could go off the open world bits and go down into some more curated area. Shout out to Jusant as well, which is a really cool climbing-based game from last year.
Really want to play that.
Which is all about where you plant your pittons and like the way you can, how that affects your momentum when you swing and everything. Like, doubling down on climbing mechanics could be like the thing, like, that would make Tomb Raider work.
That's it, like, you know, we've had games like Tomb Raider, we've had games like Uncharted, but like you said, you know, we haven't really seen innovation in that space in the AAA sort of zone. Like, all games that have parkour kind of feel the same.
Yeah.
All games that have, you know, wingsuit kind of feel the same. Traversal is stagnated, I think. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the last big sort of innovation I can remember is Uncharted 4 introducing the rope and the winch.
Yeah.
Like, that was nearly 10 years ago. Like,
totally.
If Tomb Raider comes back, I want to see it innovate on those traversal mechanics, you know, do something else with the ice picks. I'm not saying go full Death Stranding, but take a leaf out of that game's book and make just getting around the world feel like something, I don't know, something different. Something
it should feel
fun.
Like you're conquering a space. Like, because I hate the traversal in the Horizon games. I forget that it's the Zero Dawn and the other one. You will stand exactly here, you will jump exactly here, and whatever. And it was just such a way of making an entire world feel like a set of tracks that I'm going to be going on. Like you did Death Stranding, you could conquer any of that environment and watch the game freak out as you try and put a ladder on the side of some part of it, but you can get up there.
Yeah.
And, like, that can feel great. But yeah, we'll see. Like, so far all we have is a part of a leak, but it's detailed enough and it seems to be getting enough traction that this seems to be the next main Tomb Raider.
I feel like we're going to see it sooner rather than later. They've been working on it for a little while. It was announced a couple of years ago at this point. I know the developers, no, they are still part of Embracer Group at this moment in time. So I think Embracer is going to kind of double down on this as one of their big franchises alongside Lord of the Rings. So I would expect to see something before the year is out. Maybe that's just a quick trailer, a logo reveal, whatever it is, maybe a shot of Lara herself, but I feel like we're going to see this soon.
It is about time. Speaking of it being about time, it's the end of the podcast. I'm Scott Tailford. That's Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tailford. Goodbye, Scott Tailford.
This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford. That's the same thing I'd go into. Scott Tailford, Josh Brown. Catch you next time. Bye.
Not bad for a first day back, eh?
Thank you.
Welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.